Feral Audio.
It's time for another Minor Revelations with Drew Droege. Hi, how's it going? It's another week. Oh my God, we're still here. We're still here, shaking in mild, vague terror, but here we are. Speaking of terror, something that I actually love that doesn't really bring me terror, but brings me joy, but it terrorizes others, is ghosts. I love them, and I love witchcraft, devil worship, anything like that I find just like fascinating and hilarious and wonderful. Like people's commitment to the dark arts. I just find really beautiful and so much fun. What actually scares me is like, oh, there's a killer in the house, like an actual person. Like, that's terrifying to me. I'm from a small town in the South. So like woods and Texas Chainsaw Massacre is the most terrifying thing to me. Like things like that, where you're like, okay, these like really, there was that movie about Eliza Dushku was in it. And it was like these people in the woods and they had like bow and arrows. I don't remember the name of it, but like somebody got chopped in half against a tree, through their brain. Things like that. Wrong Turn. That's the name of it. Terrifying. But ghosts are not scary to me. I think they're wonderful and lovely, and I really believe in them. And I think I believe that when people die, their energy has to go somewhere. I don't think it can just like disappear or float up to heaven. I did take the E out of heaven because I'm a good Presbyterian when I sing hymns. Heaven. No, I just think the energy's there, and I think it's beautiful that when you can feel it somewhere and you And I don't really know much about it and, about ghosts, but I do have an interaction that I want to talk about in a minute. But yeah, growing up, there were ghost stories. And in the South, there was the Gray Man, which was a story of in the beach cities, there would be these stories of people on the night of a hurricane or a big tropical storm, there would be a knock at the door and people would answer the door and there'd be some man in a World War I jacket. And they couldn't see his face, and he would just say, there's a storm coming and you should leave, evacuate your home. And the people that listened to him, they would leave and they would come back and their houses would be safe, but houses on either side of them would be torn apart. And people that wouldn't listen to them, wouldn't listen to the Gray Man. So he was this ghost story that would come around. I don't know if it's true. Of course, I don't know. I think it's just magical and wonderful that these stories exist. And there's some other story about in Polly's Island about this ghost named Alice. And I don't know. She just hung out in hammocks and gave out recipes. I don't know her. I don't remember her story, but everybody talked about the ghost of Alice. And in high school, there was this place out in the country called Sally's Bridge. And apparently the story is that Sally was this girl and she was on her way to the prom. Of course, this is nowhere near any school. It's like if you went to school out in the trees. But she was on her way to prom and she was decapitated on this bridge. It makes no sense. But if you pull up onto Sally's Bridge, and you get out of your car and you walk around the car three times. And I think you had to say something like, come out, Sally, or hi, Sally, or whatever you needed to say to her. And then you would get back in the car. You couldn't get the car started for a long time. And of course, in high school, we would always go out to Sally's Bridge and it would happen. You would have a hard time starting the car, probably because of condensation would go up in the late at night. I don't know. Or there's a ghost there. I choose to believe. Ghosts and science, I think it's all wonderful. It was also out by Sally's Bridge is where all the devil worshipers would hang out, which everyone was terrified of in my town. And I loved that there were devil worshipers because it was just the really cool redneck nerds that never did anything. I didn't even ever know that they even existed. I was never a part of any of it and I never even knew if it happened. But, I love that we were just taught to fear that. You know, it was just be afraid of demons. And I was like, demons are great. Let's invite them out to play. Yeah. And so I've always wanted to have like an interaction with a ghost. And I've always been fascinated by it. And I love hearing people's stories. And I had a story about this was quite a while ago, because it would have been the apartment I lived in before the one I'm in now. And I've lived in this place for 2 years. So this would have probably been, let's say, 8 years ago. And I moved into this apartment and it was this great big space that hadn't been occupied for like 6 months. And my friend was living in the front. It was like a duplex, and she lived in the front part of it. And so I was like, I'm, you know, moving into the back part. And so I started noticing some things were kind of off. One night there was this light that was in the this closet that should have been the washer and dryer room. There was a light bulb that kept turning on its own. In the middle of the night, a light bulb would just come on. And I would get up in the middle of the night and turn it off. And then like maybe a week later, I would wake up and somehow it would wake me up. I wasn't like all the way across the whole apartment. I wouldn't be in my room or anything. So there was a light bulb that would just mysteriously turn on around 3 or 4 in the morning, and I would go and turn it off. And I just thought, oh, faulty wiring or weird light bulb or whatever. But it was on an old pull string. Like, it was real effort to turn it on and off. Like, I had to really pull this old timey, like, you know, metal chain to get it to turn off. Then one night around the same time of night, I woke up and my bathtub was full blast pouring water. Like, and just in the middle of the night, it was full blown. And, what's crazy is that, like, in the moment, I didn't think that was weird. I just got up and turned it off. The next day, I completely freaked out because I didn't think, like, somebody could be in the house. Like, someone could be in my place. In the moment, I was just like, oh, come on. Who left the bath going, you know? Full blast, scalding hot water. I don't know, a few weeks later, I woke up in my room, and there was this figure standing in my room over my bed. I couldn't make out if it was male, female, age. It was just this shape of a person. And I didn't freak out at all. I had no fear. But I was looking around my room, and I was like, I'm not dreaming, because I can see everything and I'm totally aware, and I'm blinking and I'm feeling the air around me, but I can't move. So I can't move, and this thing is coming towards me, and on my floor, I had these wooden floors, and there was a creak. The wood would creak right next to my bed when I would step in to get into bed. And so this thing gets up close to me, and I hear this creak. And as it's getting closer to me, I can't move. But I'm oddly fine. I'm not at all freaking out. It gets on top of me, and I feel this like weight on me. It wasn't super heavy, but there was definitely some weight there. And it's getting on top of me, and almost like a cat with its claws, like figuring out a new bed, it was kind of moving around on top of me. And I non-verbally communicated with this thing, like, hey, I'm here now. You can be here too. It's totally fine. Let me be here. I'll let you be here. And it's all good. I'm not afraid of you. Don't be afraid of me. We can coexist in some way. And the thing, like, got off of me and went away. I went to bed totally fine. I woke up the next morning flipping out, like, oh my God, what just happened to me? That was insane. But in that moment, I was totally comforted and fine. And I never had another visit from that ghost ever again. And I don't know if it went somewhere else, if it got annoyed that it wasn't scaring me, or if it just, like, that energy sort of absorbed into my new space. Anyway, I think ghosts are wonderful, and I say, if you see a ghost, just welcome it into your life. Welcome its energy. It's all great. And be terrified of real people.
Have fun.
Have fun.
Are you having fun?
Yes.
Are you having fun?
Having so much fun.
It's so much fun,
so
right?
much fun. Oh my God, I'm having the best time. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. I'm here with my friends, Courtney Peruso and Corey Podell.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh my God, we've said hi so many times.
We are on so much mescaline right now. We are getting ready to run down a freeway and like bite at traffic. I don't know. Let's have fun, you guys. What's going on? What are y'all up to today? Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday.
Yeah.
Corey was late. Sorry. I
so
called her out immediately.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God.
I fucked up.
Yeah. Big time.
I own it. I fucked up.
Just own it. It's fine. We've all done it. We were just saying the worst though is when I'm late and I make my guests wait. And that's one thing. And we were all just like, it's totally fine. Here we are. It's the morning.
I think it's nice to be like, some people, that's like a big pet peeve. Like, I feel like I because I can tend to be like 5 minutes late, I'm very forgiving when it happens.
Yes, me too. I'm always 5 to 10 minutes late. Yeah. And I have gotten into such trouble with it all my life. Like, my father was crazy about the clock. Like, he was so German in that way. He was raised in this like very, very verbally abusive household where he would get in trouble for taking naps like growing up. And it was just this, everything was a sign of weakness. And so if we were 15 minutes early, we were late. You know what I mean? That was the thing. Even to parties, I was so humiliated growing up when I'm like, we don't have to be the first people here, but we had to be always. And I would, every Sunday morning without fail, being screamed out in the car all the way to church because I would hold the family up. I would get up at the right hour, you know, I would just, I am in my head. I'm such an Aquarius. I'm always talking to myself. I always have something else going on, way more interesting in my head than what's going on in front of me. And so it just took me forever to get ready, and I would always make them late. And my dad, so it's literally, I mean, that is so, like, talk about nature versus nurture. Like, I was raised where, like, being late was the worst thing you could be. And I still am late. So it is in my DNA to be a little bit late. And I've gotten in trouble with it at the Groundlings when I would teach. And like, I'm never like crazy late, but I'm always within 5 to 10 minutes late. It's just that thing. And I overbook my time. You know, I know that's irritating to people that are like all about being on time and, you know, and this and that and that. But I also am like, you know what? I work in the arts. Things happen when they do.
Yeah.
You know, time is a construct, you guys. Get it over it. Like, we'll finish when we do. Yeah. Things will happen when they do. You know, it's just one of those things that it's like, because I feel like people that are ruled by the clock always don't have much else going on. I'm sorry. Like, you know, that inside their head. Like, where is your imaginary world that you can go into?
Yeah.
You don't have one. I think you're just like, you know, it's 10:03. We were supposed to start at 10. Mm-hmm. My life is ruined. It's like, I don't care that much about it. And I can't apologize that much about being late. It just is not a big deal to me, and I don't understand. And I know that it's rude, and I know that it's something that people, when I do it, and I've had people tell me, like, Drew, people were waiting on you. And the weird thing too is I still go through all of it beating myself up when I am late. Places, I'm constantly driving places going, everyone's so mad at you, and oh my God, and you're late, and why did you do this? And because it's my father screaming at me all over again, but I'm still late.
Yeah.
It's just like anything else.
I understand nature versus nurture because my whole family they're early risers. And like, one of the worst things in our family was to like sleep late.
Right.
Feel lazy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I just have never been able to do it.
I
can't wake up early. Or I can. It's just like very painful.
Yeah.
And they, like, no matter what, for years, I had to wake up early. And now, if I can sleep in, I sleep in, no matter what.
Yeah, same here.
And it's just in my nature.
Yeah, I know. And that's just exactly, that's just the way you are. And there are things even with our friends that we go, oh, I get so mad. But like, that's just who they are. They might apologize, or, you know, I have a friend who's just insane over like communicating in text. Like, I don't, in person, he's so lovely and we have such a good vibe. And via text, I'm always like, what are you talking about right now? And I've just come to be like, that's just who you are. Like, I really can't be mad at you. And if you were like that in person, maybe we could talk about it, but I forget about it when I see you.
That's our friend Kate Frisbee. Well,
she's listening.
No,
she sounds like an asshole.
We love her so much.
I love Kate, of course.
Me and Kate, we write together a lot. Uh-huh. And we whenever I see her, I feel so tender towards her. I love her so much.
Of course.
I just want to
hug
her.
Yeah, she's the greatest.
But over text, we're both probably monsters to each other. And so we had to had a face-to-face recently where we were like, we cannot get in, unless we're being like, I'll meet you there at 2 or scheduling logistics or jokes. We can't talk about anything remotely serious over text.
Because Corey's been like, read this text. I mean, and Kate's done it to you too. You know what I mean? So like, I've like witnessed some of your interactions.
Are you in the middle? Are you in the middle sometimes?
I mean, I don't care and I don't know what's going on. Like, not in a mean way, I don't care. But I think Kate does a thing where she's like saying exactly what she would say and not editing and like not knowing that like by the time you get to the end, you're still reading the first things that she said on the text. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like she's just really
heated. It's like this weird stream of consciousness.
Stream of consciousness. Okay, yeah.
Like, for example, she texted me, we were talking about something, and she texted me this like novel of a text, and she knew I was teaching a class. And I like looked at my phone like, and it was right there like 10 minutes in, and it was all I could think about. I was like, let's take an early break just so I could read this text that like actually was just her like spewing something in the moment.
But then do you get mad? Do you get mad going, you know I'm teaching right now?
Yeah,
why
I mean, that's what I was pissed about. Nothing in the text was, I was like, yeah, but
I know.
It's the fact that I told her I was going in to teach and I'm like, you know that's going to stress me out.
Yeah, I know.
But she had to, you know, she couldn't help herself.
Yeah,
and so anyway,
yeah.
We made an agreement that we would just talk in person if we had to talk about anything heavier.
I'm such a nerd about text, and I write every text like it's like, you know, an email or like that I've really thought about. I will sit there.
Mm-hmm.
I write out full words. I don't do abbreviations. I make sure the punctuation's right. I will Google spelling to make sure the spelling's right. Like, I'm a nerd about that stuff. And I'm very sensitive about tone of emails and texts.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because there's sometimes out that things will fly all over me when somebody just doesn't know how to write tone. And so, but I go overboard also. Like, I'll write, hi, with like 12 eyes. Like, we're friends and things are good.
Yeah, just you so really craft it.
Just so they don't think that I'm going, hi. You know what I mean? Because that just sounds so like, listen, I need this, and this.
Yeah.
And sometimes texts can read that way. And so I want it to be, I definitely want them to sound a little bit more, but I'm such a Southern lady that like writes letters of, you know, you know, it's like, you know, Ann Landers every time I text somebody because like, it's just, I have to remember that other people aren't like that. And I have to, I've even had to say to people, like, I'm really sensitive. So when you send emails that are, you know, I don't appreciate like, you know, when you get just some like really like crabby, curt email from somebody about something, I'm like, what?
How about dismissive?
Starting with a hello, you know, I am so and so, you know, whatever. But I know we're doing everything wrong. We're doing everything wrong.
I will sometimes like draft my text in notes first if they're like feel important or like I'm scared because, which is like super psycho. I don't do that with like friends or something, but if it's like some kind of like flirtation or some interaction I'm like worried about. I don't want it to like send before I'm done. I don't want them
to
see me writing it. Like,
I
to see the time taken.
I think probably more people do that than you think.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Also, isn't it funny how people have different, I have one friend in particular that is so flirty via text and it's like, oh, hi. And it's just always so kind of like, not always sexual, but definitely like, you know, it's always like, you know, hey, gorgeous, what's going on? And I want to see your pretty face. And then in person, none of it. There's zero vibe in person.
Yeah.
But on text, it's like, and I'm like, what is that about? And it's like, is that just a ploy? Or is that like who you really are? And like in person, you're like nervous or what?
Some people are better writers.
Yeah. And it's true.
Yeah.
It's really true. And I definitely, you know, I find, even though like it's like, and what we do is like talking to people and I'm always like in front of people all the time. When I'm really upset about something, I find like writing it is better.
Yeah.
And then we can talk after. It's never like, I only want to communicate via email, but when I'm really upset, I have to write an email first and then we can talk about it. But I need you to hear, because when I'm really upset and emotional, I feel like I would just be screaming all over the place and not really getting my point across. And I feel like I can be a little bit more, you know, balanced when I'm emailing, you know.
Yeah.
Organized.
Mm-hmm. I know, but that's...
No, but email and text, yeah, tone is really hard because a
it
lot
is
of it
really
is
hard.
How we're interpreting it. So, like, whatever mood you're in that day, yep. you're reading that text that says yep. fine, fine.
Exactly.
And that's you putting that on yourself. Exactly. When he was just like, fine.
Exactly.
I mean, there's like a million different ways.
I know.
So I think it has to do more about us. It's so hard, though, to not.
It is really hard.
That's why
we're just bombarded all the time. I mean, just like our phone doesn't ring nearly as much, but we're constantly mm-hmm. in these never-ending conversations with all of each other.
Yeah.
Like, it's constantly like,
oh, I'm in a panic if my phone rings.
Yeah, oh, I know.
It's what?
Someone
Stop
that
it.
I barely
Look
know
at it.
Called me this morning at 9 a.m., and I was like, oh, my God, who died? You know, and yeah. I didn't answer because I was really scared because I was like, he's calling me.
Yeah, it's scary.
And
now.
He didn't leave a message. So I'm assuming it was either a butt dial or it wasn't that big of a deal. And I'll get an email from him later.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll call him and be like, hey, did you call me? And what's going on? But like, I can't imagine what it would be. But it's really scary to get a phone call at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
From someone you don't really know very
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
You know?
I wake up every morning to a paragraph text from my mom, which is a thing that like, because she's like 3 hours ahead or whatever uh-huh, and uh-huh. she wakes up early and she doesn't care when I don't respond. Like I can't, like I respond sometimes, but like right. there's just too much to like acknowledge yeah, every yeah. article she's sending, every thought that pops into her head that she like feels right. the need to share.
Right.
So it's like I tend to like, that's like the first thing I wake up to in the morning, which is I have it. I can't break of hers.
Oh, and well, if my mom doesn't understand like what's appropriate for a text versus what's an email sometimes. She's gotten yeah. better, but and like she, you know, and I love talking to her, but she emails a lot more now, which is easier for me too. But she used to send, you know, the 30-minute long text.
Yeah.
And then when email, like, hey, how are you? You know, and I'm yeah. like, you know, to be like, it's the opposite. Like a text is a pet yeah. thing. And email is where you can really get into the details.
Yeah.
And my mom is such a detail person and loves to go through everything that they've done that day and what they were eating and where they ate, you know, where they went and, you know, and who they saw, and you know, and she loves to just like tell stories, and so she, email is a better form for her than texting, for sure. Well, I want to hear some stories. Who wants to tell me first? Who wants to go?
Corey's gonna go first.
Okay.
I want to hear you.
That's my punishment for being late.
Right.
Well, first of all, I want to say that I was listening to one of the episodes you did recently when you talked about Lucille Ball.
Yes.
That really comforted me.
Oh
in
my
a
God.
Big
oh,
way
good.
Because
oh, good.
I never, not that I didn't get it. There's a lot, there's some comedy I don't get, but I understand other people do.
Right.
But I did not like her. Like off putting yeah. to me.
Me too.
And you were the first, literally the first person in the history of my lifetime to say, this is why she sucks. And you put it into words in a way that I
Please
couldn't.
Please catch me
oh
up.
Oh my God.
He
oh,
just was
you.
Making the argument that Carol Burnett is the true.
Oh.
I did a book
Legend.
Report on her in fifth grade.
Yeah, I mean, she's...
we had to do historical figures. Everyone was doing Abe Lincoln and shit. And I was like, Carol Burnett. And my teacher was like, okay.
Oh, your teacher absolutely should have been like, thank you, Corey.
Right.
No, I was just, I was just saying, and first of all, I did also say, I hate like... when women get put, you know, against each other, because I do hate
totally.
To be like, Carol Burnett's the queen of comedy, not Lucille Ball, because it's like, they both could be if I liked mm-hmm. both of them. But I just, and Carol Burnett is plenty lauded. It's not like people don't know who she or care about her. And you know, but Carol Burnett is a human being and is, mm-hmm. and is such a, and is so flawed and alive and real. And Lucille Ball was always this alien to me that had a crazy voice and she had dead eyes and she was never really crying. I never believed she never believed what she was doing.
Yeah.
And she seemed like she hated it. There was something about her that was really cynical on like a cellular level to me that I always felt like Lucille Ball was hating what she was doing. And then I was saying, you know, you go into watch a Dick Cavett show and she's miserable at the end of her life. And it's really sad to see this like woman who was like brought so much joy to people who like had none of it inside. Whereas Carol Burnett, you're like, you just know that it's everything in her to
yeah.
to she's so alive when you watch her and like, and she's able to just like play these crazy characters. And, but it's just been my goal of my life is to look at that and go, you can be that big when you mean it like that, when
yeah.
you really commit and care on that level, you know? And I just always thought Lucille Ball was just like, I got why people like, she was funny. She literally looks like a clown.
Yeah.
I mean, she was a beautiful woman, but she painted her face like a drag queen.
Mm-hmm.
And she was always, you know, and everything was, you know, and she was an idiot And that was funny to people, because they were like, oh, this woman is so stupid. But I just was like, why is she stupid?
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? I was like, I don't like that she's stupid. I want her to, like, at least,
outwit him.
Or, outwit at some point, you know.
Never. She always gets caught.
She always.
Which I guess is the funny part. But you just put it in words and.
Well, thank you.
And yeah, so I appreciate that. And then I started to think about, like, oh, what are other things that everyone is super into that I've never admitted to not being into, but I haven't really thought of much. That's not, well, yeah, big, but anyway.
I love this stuff.
That you just like, and like your opinion about Forrest Gump. I always liked the movie Forrest Gump, but I remember reading something you posted about it, and it really made me be like, see it in a different way.
Same. I remember
that.
And,
oh, wow.
And it's I appreciate Facebook your messages. Opinions.
About that. I got people sent me messages on Facebook. And that was Louis Vertel's article that he wrote about Forrest Gump. And I loved it so much, and it summed up why I hated it. But because I just posted it, I got two messages on Facebook from people I don't know being like, what, do you just hate things? Is that what you do? Like, people are so mad when you hate on Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
But it's terrible.
I mean, I just like that you have such strong opinions and are not afraid to say that.
Thank you.
About, you know. So anyway,
Well, thank you. I used to be really scared of that. I used to be really scared because I used to think, well, people, you know, forever was like, you need a show where you just go on and like review movies and talk about you. And I'm like, well, I could never do that because I want to be in them. And it just gets really, really creepy at a certain point. But then, you know, my argument is always like, yeah, I never like to punch down.
Right.
I would never be like, I mean, Forrest Gump won Best Picture and most people love it.
Mm-hmm.
I am, you know, in Burbank with a podcast. So who cares? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's not like I'm going to go, I saw the worst independent movie. It was made for $1,000 and these people suck.
Right.
Like, that's just mean. You know what I mean?
Shitty.
Like, you know, and so I think you just have to really think about, like, when I'm really going to rag on something, it's got to come from my experience. And I just have to say, this is my opinion. And I think the other point, I'm like, why else are we here to just say, because I'm so, it's just annoying when, you know, we live in a town where everybody just loves everybody's everything and everything's really, really great.
Yeah.
And you know what? Here's the thing that I feel about that. And I don't know if this is, whatever. Who cares? Don't qualify it, Drew. I love when people are fake in person. I don't mind. I've been fake. When somebody goes, I loved your so-and-so, and I think that's just being nice, and I'm Southern in that way. I don't need someone telling me their honest opinion about my work if I don't ask for it. You know what I mean?
Of course.
So I do appreciate in LA how people are a little fake with each other, because in New York or in other places, it's a little too much sometimes. Because I didn't ask.
You don't need feedback from everyone.
I don't need feedback from everyone. And I don't need, you know, I mean, I was in New York for, you know, almost a month in December, and I had a little meltdown because I was like, I don't need my cabbie to just fucking give me realness all the time. I'm like, sometimes it's nice when some stoned idiot picks you up in a Lyft in LA and goes like, oh my God, isn't the world amazing and you're beautiful. Great. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
But I also think like we have to have some teeth and some opinions about something, because otherwise it's just like, who cares? Everybody's, you know, we're just, then we become mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mayonnaise.
What is something though that you Corey, that you think is like, that the world loves, that you're just like, I don't get.
I'm like afraid to say it, but I'm going to follow your
lead.
Please do. And you modeled some really good behavior for me. So Broadway musicals, just
musicals. Oh my God, I love that. That's your opinion.
I guess I understand though why people like them. I admire the talent and what it takes.
Sure.
But I don't personally enjoy it really. Where people break out into song. It doesn't.
Oh, so musical theater in general, not
it doesn't
specifically
feel
Broadway.
Real to me or true. Yeah,
okay.
Not Broadway. I mean musical
you would
theater.
Like off Broadway, I love. But once it gets to the Great White Way, I'm out. That's a lot of people though. I'm only saying that to like comfort you, not to make you say, you know,
but I've seen Rent and I thought it was awesome. Like I loved it, but how basic am I, you know?
Yeah.
It's like,
oh my God, it's so funny. I hate Rent.
See, and I don't even have the depth to know what to like, or I'm just not drawn to it. I guess.
No, and that's totally makes sense. You know, it took me a while to finally realize, it was like well into my 30s, to look around and say, you know what? I'm in my 30s. I can admit I don't like Shakespeare. You know, I did it all through high school and college. I've seen amazing productions. I would still go see really great productions of Shakespeare, but I don't have that love for it. And I'm an actor who can actually say I don't like Shakespeare. And you know, And yeah. and you're an actor and you can say I don't like musicals. Theater. Now, what about you just you don't believe them or
they just I guess my preference is for things that could happen in real life. Like I like real things. And so like sci-fi doesn't appeal to me either.
I get that.
Game of Thrones type thing, like that's a little bit hard for me too.
Yeah, no, I don't enjoy that at all.
So I like things that are like really, really grounded in reality. I'm not like super into any cartoons really. Like my mom said when I used to watch Sesame Street when I was little, I would like hate the parts that were cartoons and I only wanted to see the people and I would like complain as soon as like the Muppets and the people didn't come
on. I was so similar. I hated cartoons. I would only watch Carol Burnett Show because those were characters that I wanted, that I cared about. I loved sitcoms from the 70s that were like all in syndication because it was like before my time. Because I talk about sitcoms that I loved and I'm like, I see when they were on the air and I'm like, that was like maybe before I was born. But I loved like One Day at a Time. I loved like dark sitcoms that were like about like urban families in the city, like single moms or like black families. And I was like, because I was so, it was so not my experience. And I was like, this is what I need to learn about and know. And I didn't care at all about, you know, I loved this show called Special Delivery. I'm older than you guys, but it was on Nickelodeon.
I remember that one, yeah.
But it was two real people. It was Jody and Jeff, and there were two puppets. There was a puppet old night watchman named Sam, and then there was a mouse. I think her name was like Muffy or Missy, and she was a puppet mouse.
Wait, was it Jody?
Jody.
Yes, Jody. I remember that Jeff. Show because my sister's name is Jody, and we would watch that.
So Jody and Jeff totally were real life people, and they would watch, and I loved that because they, you know, they would like learn lessons, and they worked at some sort of store.
Yeah, where there were like mannequins.
They were mannequins. That was it. They were mannequins at night in the mall.
The 80s was so into mannequins.
No,
why?
And I love everything about it. I love the movie Mannequin.
I do too.
Love it. Unapologetically.
But it was a real theme in the 80s.
Yeah, it was. It was a real thing where it was like all of a sudden they would come alive. Also malls.
I think that's part of it.
We love the malls. We were always spending our times there. So like, what if the mannequins were actually people at night? Once the customers go home, they magically become alive. But then they go back to being mannequins during the day.
Yeah, I'm like, what are the other movies? I'm trying to like... I know the concept, but...
Well, there was Opportunity Knocks that was with Jennifer Connelly, and that was just about a mall that they got shut in the mall overnight, but there were no mannequins in that. What are some other...
Well, like Fast Times at Ridgemont High takes place a lot
in
the mall.
Yeah, in the mall, sure. A lot. Gremlins 2, there's a whole sequence in the mall that they go. That's a huge deal.
I used to watch Saved by the Bell. They all worked at the mall.
They were,
I think it's tied into malls.
Yeah, exactly.
Mannequins and malls go together.
Yeah, exactly.
We've come to
in this podcast.
But you could probably argue like everyone was plastic in the 80s and we were obsessed with
it's a metaphor. Mannequin shoulders.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Also just like the visual like aesthetic.
And they had the perfect coiffed hair and everything was very, you know. Oh, well, I get it. But anyway, I love that you don't love musicals because I do. And there's something about them that I just lose my mind over. But I get it. I understand. I mean, I think also like I can't sing or dance, but I've always said the reason I do sketch comedy and improv is because I'm a musical theater actor who can't sing or dance because it's that same style. But I watch a musical and I'm just in awe of the talent.
Yeah.
That I'm like, I could never do that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's definitely that thing, but there are a lot of musicals that I don't like. You know, I love the idea. I love the concept of a musical theater, but you know, I literally said I love the concept of a musical theater. Sorry, I'm having a mild stroke. But you know what I mean. In theory, I go and see every year. I try to see all the big Tony-nominated shows. I try to go in May and catch them, but then there are always a handful that I'm like, ugh, that was the worst.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, my boyfriend's father goes to the city once a week to see a Broadway show from Hartford, Connecticut. He takes the bus. Uh-huh. He's retired.
Yep.
Takes the bus, goes in, sees a show. So he sees
that's
everything.
Like the dream life to me. Like when I'm an old man, I can't wait because I'm kind of already there. I go to the movies in the middle of the day and it's like me and all the blue hairs. Because I'll go to like a weird art movie and I'll be like, oh, this is, you know, nominated for an Indie Spirit. I'll go check this out. And some foreign film that's 4 hours long. Great. But yeah, I understand. And it's a lot of, there's a type of musical theater actor that can be really irritating.
Yes.
That, you know? I understand.
Yeah.
You know, that I get, you know, because, and you think they'd be similar to us, and we're not. We don't really drink the same water. So it's a little bit difficult. There's someone who's always about being technically perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And our whole thing is celebrating being weird and different and kind of messy.
And authentic. Yeah.
And authentic. Yes, yeah. Exactly. And I feel like we have a hard time sometimes with students that are musical theater based they play like really stock characters and mm-hmm. they're about getting everything, being on key.
Yeah.
There are a lot of musical theater actors that I don't enjoy watching because they're too perfect.
Too crisp.
Very crisp.
Yeah.
Well, I've always said I totally appreciate and understand / have zero interest in Barbra Streisand because to me, she's so perfect. Mm. You know, I've never seen her mess up. I would love to see her like go up and forget her lines and forget her words.
Mm-hmm. Get flustered.
And be a human being. But yeah. It's that same thing. I like messy. I like Diane Wiest. I mean, that's kind of my thing as opposed to like.
I just watched Edward Scissorhands. She's so amazing.
The greatest.
She's
right?
Never taken an acting class.
I know.
Did I hear that on this podcast?
I think I talk about it way too much.
Corey, how many of these podcasts did you listen to?
I listened to it.
No, I love it.
Courtney, talk to me. What's up?
Just in this moment?
Yeah.
I was like trying to think of something that I hate that everyone else loves. I was like, I guess just Harry Potter.
Oh,
I don't hate.
Yeah,
I just like never laugh. I've fallen asleep during so many of those movies because I'll go because I like to participate.
Sure,
and
sure.
And then like fall asleep.
I know I'm right there with you on Harry Potter. And it's very, you know, I know that the movies get better. I've only seen the very first one. And
yeah.
That's it that I've seen. And I was like, okay, I get what this is. And. But I don't even think that as a kid I would really love it because it's just not, I don't know. It's not entertaining to me. Like, I get the fantasy of it and I get, like, Lord of the Rings, like, I saw all of those movies. I saw them all once in the theater and fully enjoyed them. But
yeah,
I would never watch them again.
I can't get on. I like Game of Thrones, but it's only because of like the sex stuff. I think if you mix that with the fantasy, like I could get on.
Get on board.
If it's
really
like a horny.
If it's like I like how fucked up everyone is.
Yeah.
Also like wearing costumes and there's dragons.
Oh sure. Have you seen Caligula?
Because no,
that's the definition of just. I mean, it's. Have you seen Caligula,
I know
Corey?
But I haven't.
Okay,
seen.
Well, I mean, it's. You're gonna be like, Drew. What did you? It's so insanely filthy. I mean, it's pornographic, but it's from the 70s. So Helen Mirren's in it, and Peter O'Toole and Malcolm McDowell plays Caligula. So these world-renowned, classically trained, greatest actors in the world in the 70s were in a film that. Tinto Brass, I think it's who. There's a crazy story about it because they filmed one version of the movie and then late at night, not unlike Jody and Jeff in Special Delivery, they went in and they filmed hardcore pornography with everything in it and they cut it into the movie. So these actors
and
you're watching.
Helen Mirren?
She's obviously not in those scenes.
Oh, okay.
But it's like the courtesans and the. But then there's like really disturbing stuff like Malcolm McDowell, like there's a man and a woman who get married because, you know, Caligula was insane and, you know, kind of like what's going on now in our leadership, just like did whatever the fuck he wanted. And there was a couple getting married, a young couple, and he like took them right after their marriage and fisted the man like in front of the woman. And so that's completely in
like,
the movie. So Malcolm McDowell is doing that. It's insane to watch because you're just like, I can't believe these people are in this movie, but it's really, 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 really dirty.
Check it out.
I highly recommend it. If you like Game of Thrones for that reason, I would highly recommend that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And there was a great, that was not dirty at all because it was on TV, but I loved I want to say it was on in the 80s. And we watched it, I think we watched it in the 90s when I was in high school because it was one of those like teachers love to throw on a movie. It was a miniseries called AD about the same sort of time period. And it was a soap opera. It was basically Dynasty, but it was all like sword and sandal. But it was all character based. And I loved it because it was all about like drama, like who was sleeping with who and who was screwing over somebody else and the brothers that hated each other for whatever reasons. And And yeah, and yeah, it was called AD.
That's remember like when you would get to watch movies in school? How
was
special
the
that was.
Best yes. Thing
now,
ever.
Kids won't get excited by that.
No, I know they don't.
Why?
But
because they all have their own personal devices. They could watch movies on at any point. They're oversaturated.
Yeah, they really are. Yeah.
And there's no like.
Well, that was the thing. We had to, you know, we had VHS tapes yeah. and then later DVDs that we could go home and watch. But like when. The teacher would roll that TV in.
Oh, my gosh.
And especially
Friday
when
movie.
I remember when it was like, I remember being like, it's Gone with the Wind. This movie is 4.5 hours long.
Yeah.
That means we're going to watch this for like 2 weeks because yeah. it's like a 45-minute class.
Yeah.
We only watched just little chunks of it.
And also, as I had was a teacher for a brief stint, it's like great for the teacher too. You're like,
yeah.
Great, this will take
oh,
up.
This will take up so much time. Yeah, where were you a teacher?
I was a substitute teacher right after... After college, but I ended up like taking over a ninth and 10th grade like class for like half a year because like a teacher was like going through a terrible divorce and like went a little crazy. And they were like, listen, he hasn't been teaching anything for half a year. And like, you're 22. Will you? Okay. Yeah.
Oh, my God. What was that like?
It was fun. I mean, it was like, it was so stupid that I did. I was like working in a theater company at the time. And I was like, oh, I'll get paid like $5 extra an hour to like be their actual teacher. Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
I like had and no like, teacher training
you, and
or
you
whatever,
had no but... like reason to be there. And you're like in charge of these like young minds.
I like tried to do a good job. It was English. So like I loved like teaching the books.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then I forgot to do grammar until the end. You know what I mean? They were like someone helping me, but yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, grammar doesn't matter. Read this book. Unless you're going to be nervous like I am about the texts and whatever.
Yeah.
That's so funny because I had, and I talked about this on my old podcast. This one of my crazy teacher stories was that I had a teacher in 10th grade mm-hmm. have a nervous breakdown in class and she locked the doors and held us hostage and started speaking in an Indian accent and was losing her mind. This white lady
oh my God.
Who had a complete psychotic break. And this was it was everything, and we were and this was just a few years before the first like major school shooting, it was so it wasn't in our reality that anything like that could happen in high school. And I've thought about that in context of now what would happen, and I think now somebody would have like tackled her and gotten her gun because she kept saying someone's going to die. It took place over 2 days. And the first day she basically, it was like she, the first half of the year was this older lady and she was new to our school and we didn't really know what was going on there. And she was just like, read the next story in the book. It was also English, read the next story, answer the questions. And we were like, this woman who, you know,
yeah.
this idiot. We came back for Christmas break. She told us her whole story and she was like, I'm in an abusive relationship. My husband and he's like dying and old and I'm trying to get out of it and I'm losing my mind and my kids are on drugs. And I mean, it was every horrible after school special all rolled into one lady. And
she's
was
telling this to her 10th graders.
Her 10th graders. We were 15 and 16 years old.
Jesus.
Then she basically was like, please don't tell anyone. Because she goes, I had to transfer schools. She said, something happened last year and I had to transfer schools. So I'm only here for the rest of this year to get my retirement so I can have my own money. And we were basically put this responsibility on 15-year-olds.
Wow.
And we were like, and we were
really
all the like.
She needed someone to talk to.
She really needed someone to talk to. And we were all the like the gifted kids and we were all like, and we had nothing happen to us ever in our lives. We'd only seen the movies. And so we were like, absolutely. You're going to be our drama. We're going to take on your cause. And mm-hmm. I remember I went home that night and prayed for her. And I was just like, you know, and I was like, oh, I want her to be okay. And and then the next day we came in and she was full blown batshit. I mean, her hair was like unhinged and she had like, she always wore these like dark pantyhose and she was older. Her pantyhose were gone and her clothes were crazy. She looked completely nuts and we felt deeply unsafe and she had an Indian accent and she had lost her mind.
Oh yeah.
And was spinning out and was saying all these things and was drawing all these things on the chalkboard about like Maslow's hierarchy of thinking and biofeedback. And she was doing all this biofeedback stuff and it was just insanity.
Wow.
And she knew a bunch of drama about like a bunch of gossip about a bunch of us that was all true. Like I had gotten caught drinking at a school football game in the fall before she knew about it.
Uh-huh.
She brought it all out in the class. So then after that day, we ran screaming out of the room. She's crazy. Get her out. You know, we were like.
Yeah.
So then they apparently in the next class, the next period, the next class came in. And what I hear was like men in jackets came in and took her out. Like it was that. I didn't see that.
Yeah.
And then our vice principal came in the next day and she said, Mrs. Cummings has the flu. Oh, I said her name. Sorry. she has the flu. She's not going to be coming back. We're like, the flu? Really?
Yeah, yeah.
And so we were like, and then they gave us this 22-year-old Courtney Peruso character who came in and was like still a senior in college who had no idea. And she had zero control of us because we had gone through like major drama. We had nobody helping us. We had no counselors come and talk to us. It was just like, that didn't happen.
Did it bring your class so close together?
Well, we were already close because it was like all our friends were in there and but we couldn't, every time we got in that space, we had to talk about it for the rest of the year. Like all I remember was like, wait, and then she did this and remember this.
And you were like piecing it together. Yeah. Like
it was
going
the most
back,
dramatic
like,
thing that had happened in your young
life. Yeah, of course. And so we were like, oh my God, this is so crazy. And this poor, I mean, I remember this... 22-year-old, she had like a really, really, really red neck. She like dug at her neck. Like her like nervous tic would be like she would like pull her fingers across her or across her clavicle in fury because like we wouldn't listen to her. We wouldn't do what she wanted us to do. And
I was weirdly mean. I don't know how I did it.
Yeah. I think you'd have to be.
Yeah, like I also think that because I didn't want to be a teacher, there was like nothing at stake except for my own experience. So like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wasn't like, I want to do this. I was like, I'm doing this for a second. So
oh my God.
I don't know. Like,
so and then you knew at the end of the beginning of the next year, you just did something else where you just like, I'm going
to. I think I just went back to like, because normally I would go in and just like, I would get to like read a book. And while I sat there, it was like high school subbing is so easy, or it was for me at the time. Mm-hmm. So I think I just like, after that year was over, I just like did regular subbing for another year and then I left.
Wow. But, and I can't believe they just gave you a class.
Yeah. Like it was, well, I had like subbed for like the head of the department. I like did a good job for her. Uh-huh, so they were like, quick, like who can do this? And I was like, okay.
Oh,
I don't know.
So crazy.
Yeah.
I was, a counselor at camp, which it's like, how did they give you a class? It's like when I was a counselor at sleepaway camp, I loved it. I had like the best. It was
I'm
like
sure
I'm
be
16
a great
or
counselor.
17, but yeah. I loved it because at night we were allowed to go out.
Oh,
and like get drunk. I mean, we weren't allowed to get drunk, but we did, and we come back and. Sometimes the kids would be awake and like, thank God nothing happened. And thinking about it now as an adult.
Oh,
and my parents sent
horrifying.
Me to that camp growing up. And I'm thinking back to like, my counselors definitely like would stumble in and whatever. How like did they give a 17-year-old? Like I was in charge of like 10-year-olds.
Right.
Thank God nothing ever happened. But like, Jesus.
I know. And you're also like. Who knows what you said or did in the moment that would leave an impression
well,
for the rest of their lives?
Well, that's what I wanted to say.
Okay.
Was this girl messaged me, one of my old campers messaged me and said, because she's still friends with some of the other campers. They're all still friends, which is cool. But and they're also like...
How old are they now?
Like Courtney's age. They were like 12 and I was 16, you know?
Right,
so
okay.
It wasn't like... So they're like lawyers and married and shit. But when someone messaged me, this was a few years ago. I commented on a picture of her and some other camper girls like, camp friends are the best friends. I'm glad to see you guys are all still together or whatever. And she wrote me this long Facebook message that was like, oh my God, Corey Podell, you are my favorite counselor. You would give us the best advice at night when you come home. And I was like, what? And I don't ever remember ever. I just was like, I remember one time I was barfing because we would get like... we would
you're also empty, 16, so you have no idea what
16,
you're doing.
I'm drinking like
you don't know
half
how to drink.
A Snapple bottle. We would pour out half an iced tea and put vodka in the rest and just get as hammered as we could in as short of amount of time.
And like, room temperature, shitty vodka.
Yeah, like whatever.
With Snapple iced
whatever
tea.
Whatever worked.
Just
but,
garbage in a handful.
So I was like throwing up one night and I remember one of the campers waking up and I was like, oh, I ate something bad. You know, like, and that was the one thing I remember. But this girl said, she just was like, you gave us the best advice at night. And then I actually was in New York and I met up with some of these girls and I was like, tell me more about that. And she was like giving me specifics and like quoting me. And I did sound fucking wise in these.
Oh my
like,
God.
Well, in a way, she was like, I was feeling really left out. I was like crying to you about how you know, I was always the third wheel and I always felt left out. And you told me, hey, Julie, where you are is the place to be.
Well, yeah.
Where you are is the place to be. And I was like, I said that?
That's kind of drunk wisdom, right?
Yeah. And I was like, you're obsessed with them. You should be obsessed with yourself. And she said, yes. She like loved it. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so mortified. And I can totally picture my like smug self probably like dropping wisdom on these 12 year olds.
Exactly.
But she said it.
In between vomits.
It helped her. And then she also said, and this one is disgusting, and I hate myself that I ever said this.
Oh, I love it.
She said, one night you told us, when we get older, we need to breathe in adventure so we can exhale life. It's so gross.
Breathe in adventure.
Why did I say that?
So you can exhale life?
Yeah. What? But she thought they, and I was like, well, you guys know I was like probably hammered every time I talked to you. and they were like, When we were counselors, we realized that's what it was. But until they became counselors they just thought I was, like, the coolest. And I would, like, be in such a good mood and, like, come home and tell them, drop this stuff. And I don't know what else I said. But anyway.
But I love it, too. I mean, you know, alcohol brings out your truest self.
Yeah.
And you are naturally a great advice giver, you know.
Thank you.
And you, I mean, you know, Dustin called you the Oprah of our network, you know, of Feral, if you know.
And it's an honor.
You know, and so you have that in you. And so the beauty of that is, like, even in your drunkenness, I love that, like, it wasn't just like, you guys leave me the fuck alone. I'm feel like shit.
No, I was connecting.
You know, you were like, this is going to be my time to, like, really connect with you. And so that's, I mean, that's really
sweet.
So,
yeah, you never know what you say if it's going to leave
really
an imprint on someone.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, man. And, yeah, I think about that when I teach, like, because, you know, like certain teachers, you remember that one thing they said to you that stung or that made you make the next move in a good way.
Absolutely.
And it's like they probably never think about
that. I mean, I've told Patrick Bestow things that he said to me and at the Groundlings, and he would be like, he was like, when did I say that? And I'm like, you said that to me. We remember those things that, you know, that and it's that crazy thing. Like, people are always listening, and they take it in whatever way, shape,
or
form that they do.
Well, that's why you're careful with your text messages and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like you never know what's gonna.
I know, because I'm always like, oh God, I would, you know. And then there are times that I'm like, I want you to know that I'm mad. I want you to know that I'm, you know, and then I'm like, I need to make that clear too.
Right.
Because sometimes in person, I can be way too like, it's fine. Listen,
me too.
It's my fault. It's my fault that I'm mad. I hate myself, first of all. So, and then I'm like, no, I need to know via text, like, this is the problem, you know.
Yeah.
So, but it is really.
Well, I
really crazy.
I actually thought about it recently because it's so hard to not like compare in our industry and Facebook, and you know, so I found myself, I swear this is so cheesy, but I was like, hey, where you are is the place to be. Don't worry about what anyone else is doing. Focus on where you're at.
It's so true.
It's the place to be. And I was like, God, I was fucking smart.
I knew it.
Stitch that on some pillows, man.
Yeah. There was this terrible, like one of those advice books that was like not as good as Chicken Soup for the Soul, or
which was so good.
So good. It's my favorite book. It's my favorite book of all time. Chicken Soup for the Soul. I like Chicken Soup for the Lawyer's Soul. Yeah, they have like 12,000.
So many.
Well, there was one that I saw when I was in high school, and it was and the title of the book was Normal is Just a Setting on the Dryer. And the cover was this wacky woman's face, and she was like in the spin cycle, and her like hands are on the glass, and she's making a face like a Lucille Ball face, and it's like normal. It's just a setting on the dryer. And so I said it one time at I went to this like summer enrichment camp when I was thinking, because I was such a nerd. It was called Governor's School, but in North Carolina, you went to, there's, you know, different, every state has them, but this was, in North Carolina, it was like in the summertime, and you would go for 6 weeks, and it was like pre-college, so, and you had a major, and so, and I was an English major, and I went to the, you know, I went to the, you know, into the class, and we were reading Maya Angelou when we were reading, you know, Confederacy of Dunces and Toni Morrison and all the books that you read when you're in 11th grade. And, you know, and I remember the class was called To Be Young, Gifted, and Here.
Oh,
which
gross.
Isn't that so disgusting? Because it was like, it's based on the Lorraine Hansberry book, To Be Young, Gifted, and Black.
Yeah.
But none of us were black.
No.
We were just here. And so they called it To Be Young, Gifted, and Here. And that was like the theme of the English like class. And so we just read all these books and just, you know, connected our white lives to the real drama of people that wrote these books and lived these stories. And in something, I remember saying, well, normal's just a setting on the dryer. And I remember my teacher being like, that is it. And that like became the quote of our class. And I was so embarrassed to admit that I like got it off of like a self-help book. Like I didn't say anything because I was so scared of being like called a failure and a fraud. And it was made me even way more of a fraud. And I never said it. But to this day, I will get Facebook messages or people that have that were in that class or will have, you know, that will it'll trickle out. That
it became your class motto.
It became the motto, and it became this thing that I'm like, I did not invent this. It's not clever. It's not anything. I'm like, you know, but
also
it also is like a good in theory. It's a good.
I mean, cliches or whatever they're called. Or like colloquialisms or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
They're for a reason.
They're there for a reason. And it's good if it helps anybody look in the world that way. It's like, okay, well, good. You know, but, you know, it's like, you know, it's just like there was that book called When I'm an Old Lady, I Shall Wear Purple. Do you know that book? You know, it's like that. It's that same thing. And it's like, I'm going to be crazy in my life and do whatever I want. You know, but.
Young, gifted, and here.
Young, gifted. To be young, gifted, and here.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? And we had t-shirts that we wore that said to be young, gifted, and here.
No, you didn't do like camps, did you? Like
I didn't do, no, not gifted like camps. Just
she was just in regular gifted classes. She reminds me of that quite a bit.
The door is right there. Go live your stupid life out with the other idiots. Corey and I have books to read. So did you go to like summer camp?
No, because I was always moving in the summers generally. Like I mean, like I moved like every couple of years growing up. Or
I moved around a lot too. Yeah.
Yeah, so
what was your family in?
My dad is Army.
Of course. Yeah.
So yeah, every couple of years, or he would like go visit my grandma, or like, but yeah. So I didn't. My mom said that I got to do camp like when I was 19 and in college, and I went to like New York for like a theater program.
Oh,
she was
yeah.
like, "This is for all those years we didn't get to send you to camp," you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
it sounds like fun.
Yeah. What, camp?
Like a theater camp.
Oh, theater camp. Yeah,
yeah,
I never
even
did.
Even though I guess I'm not into musical theater. I guess I just like any sort of like
it was more of a program.
Camp.
You would love like if it was like Chekhov camp.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing.
Yeah, the darkest.
Yeah, exactly. We're just going to really just do some Pinter. And
yeah.
Then we're going to go fishing. I don't know. Did I go to theater camp? No. I mean, I did a summer in London. I did a summer like conservatory when I was in college. But
yeah,
that was like, you know,
that's sort of what I did in like in New York or whatever. It was, yeah.
This camp that I went to growing up that I was this counselor at, it was just like this crappy little camp that, I mean, it was like not water skis on horseback riding, or it was like laying out in the sun and like doing lanyard at arts and crafts. That was it.
Right.
It was all about hanging out.
Right.
And,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
the
yeah,
drama
yeah, yeah,
of,
yeah,
which,
yeah, yeah.
You're so good at that.
Yeah. I was going to say, that sounds like the best camp.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, you guys, what are we going to talk about today? Here's some Dixie cups. We'll string them together. We'll call it a phone. But we're really just going to talk shit.
What I remember now, though, some of my favorite things the counselors would do with us when it was like we went to the soccer activity or whatever, and we kicked a few goals, and then the counselor was like, okay, let's sit in a circle. This is a game called blah, blah, blah. It was improv games that I didn't realize they were doing, that they maybe like learned in their sororities or like some shit like that. I don't think any of them were in.
No, they were not.
Or maybe in their theater classes, maybe. But that was like one of my favorite parts of camp was sitting around. What I'm realizing, it's like basically what we do for warm-ups.
Right. Yeah.
Classes and
which is what any of us would do now if we were like counselors now.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking now how sad would it be if in the summers you still went back to this camp and got really drunk. with the teenagers and that still just gave advice to these 12-year-olds.
I mean, at least I'm not an angry drunk.
No, exactly. See?
I'm a Oprah drunk. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm sorry. I cut off your story, though.
You were talking...
Was that it?
What was I saying? Sorry, I lost.
We were talking about camp and you said sleepaway camp.
I didn't go to this. It wasn't a theater camp, but I felt like I got some real good improv fundamentals.
Well, I remember when I first started taking improv classes, because the Groundlings was the first place that I took formal improv classes. I did workshops and stuff before that, but never really until then. And I remember so many of the games, and I was like, oh, I've done this in at camp or church lock-ins or everything growing up. It was always we would always go and we would do those things. You were talking about, you literally call it Sleepaway Camp. Have you seen them film Sleepaway Camp or Sleepaway Camp 2?
No.
Unhappy Campers or Sleepaway Camp 3, Teenage Wasteland?
No.
After Caligula, watch the trio of films, the Sleepaway Camp films. They're more after that, but they're no good. Don't worry about them. And you will completely stop after part one, I'm sure. Part one is the craziest horror movie from 1982.
Oh, wow.
And it is the weirdest, gayest horror movie, mainstream horror movie ever made. And it's super strange. And it's a really, spoiler alert, transphobic and the worst dialogue. It's just the best bad horror movie ever. And then parts two and three were made a month apart in the 90s. And they're shot on shitty VHS.
Yeah.
And so they're a whole different aesthetic of bad. But the first Sleepaway Camp from 82 is real good.
It's a great choice. Setting, for any sort of storytelling.
Yeah. Well, and it was right after... Friday the 13th was so popular, and I know they were trying to capitalize on that, and Meatballs and all that. But when you watch Wet Hot American Summer, they've seen Sleepaway Camp on top of these movies, because there's so much in it that looks like Wet Hot American Summer. I'm like, oh, they completely borrowed from, Sleepaway Camp as much as they did Friday the 13th and Meatballs and, all those movies from the early 80s.
Yeah.
I know. And then we were kids. I mean, I'm older than you guys, but I was a little kid in the early 80s, and so I just idolized summer camp. Summer camp was the greatest.
I waited all year to go because I lived in South Florida, but this camp was in a small little town in Connecticut. When my parents would ship us up there for 2 months at a time at a pretty young age. So
did you fly up there? How did you get up there?
We would. Yeah. My mom started a business of her own so she could pay for us to go to camp. It probably wasn't that much thinking back on it now. Shitty little camp. But she had gone there.
When
she was young. And I still have some of my best friends from that camp. Wow. I looked forward to it all year. But it's not like the facilities were nice. It was falling apart. There's graffiti on every wall.
Sure.
I mean, but
and Corey's
really
got some great letters home that her mom kept that are so fucking funny from when she's 10 and she has the exact same personality.
She's someone's trying to do a musical.
There's one where she's sad and it's so dramatic funny, but she's funny. It's already how are you such a good writer?
I was just talking shit about every single girl in my bongo.
To your mom.
We did a dramatic, she did a dramatic reading of it once.
Oh my God.
And I commented on the side at a UCB
so
show,
funny.
I think.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I love that so much. Yeah, don't you go back and you see these things? My brother shared this thing I wrote with when I was probably 10 or 11 that he found in a box, and he's like, look at you at this age. And I'm mortified, and my brother thinks it's so funny, and he's like, you're the same person. Just a know-it-all and really just super weird.
My mom found a tape recording of me when I was 4, and I was just talking into the tape recorder, and even then I was like, erase all of this. Right?
Yeah.
And then it's cute, but and I sneezed a bunch, which is something I do all the time, but I fake sneezed a bunch of that.
Oh,
whatever.
My God.
It's like you're weird how you are.
Nature versus nurture. See, we're circling back.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what it is. And we're out of time.
Oh, wow.
I know, feel like I talk too much. I'm sorry.
Oh my God. No, I feel like I was interrupting both of you a lot today. So I apologize if I was doing that. I feel like I was going, I have a story that reminds me of your story.
I learned so much.
I think I still like look at you like in awe because you were one of my first improv teachers.
Oh my God.
And that is like
I look at you in awe, but thank you. That's so sweet.
No, but
that's
it's so stupid sweet. That like, I feel like that will always be a part of our relationship where I'm just like,
yeah.
My audition.
Yeah.
I did? Oh my God. That's so crazy.
Yeah.
When you run auditions, as you both know, it's like you don't remember because you see people for like, you know, I ran into somebody the other day and she's like, you ran my audition at Groundlings as if I would remember her. And I was like, I haven't done that in 4 years.
And I've probably done like 200 of them.
Yes,
like,
exactly. And I saw you in a group of 20 people for like an hour. And so that was, you know. But I remember, you know, Mary Jo Smith ran my audition I auditioned for it. And I remember, I mean, I look at all my teachers so fun. I mean, you know, even the ones that were like horrible to me, I'm like, you are my teacher.
Yeah.
It was such a big deal to me. And I try to remember that. When, as a teacher, as we all know now, that when I go into a class, I'm like, this is a big deal, as it should be, you know, and it matters. And, you know, and it's like, because there are the days that I'm like, ugh, I'm in a mood and, everybody up, come on. And I'm like, you know, but that's.
And you're Mrs. Cummings.
Exactly.
And you download all your shit onto
your
students.
I'm like, I'm in a horrible relationship. Please don't tell anyone.
Your pantyhose are off.
Oh, they're off. No pantyhose. And that's saying a lot. Yeah. Well, thank y'all so much for being on the show. I want to thank Corey Podell and Courtney Paruso.
Thanks.
And check out your show. When and how can they hear your show?
It's on Feral Audio and it's called We Should Have a Podcast. We don't actually think we should have a podcast.
Because you actually do have a podcast.
Yeah, we hate ourselves. So.
I don't want
really
you to speak
wonderful.
For me in that way anymore. I've really been working on that.
Okay, I'm sorry. We have a podcast called We Should Have a Podcast.
I think we should have a podcast.
Okay. And not only should you, but you do.
It's
so
true.
Listen to We Should Have a Podcast also on Feral. Everybody, have a great week. And what's the motto, Corey?
Where you are is the place to be.
I love that. Where you are is the place to
and
be.
And also breathe in adventure to exhale life.